second customs here in Paris. So it's been quite hard to get it all the way here.
Could you talk about the negotiations here at the COP, and do you feel your voice is being heard inside the summit?
I think that indigenous people's voices are the voices that should be heard. Indigenous people should be inside the actual negotiations, but we're not. Those who are actually negotiating right now, they might not have to live with the consequences of climate change, but I will. I will have to live with it. My sister, my little brother, and my children, they're all going to have to live with the consequences of climate change. And who are they to decide over my future, over my sister's future, over my children's future?
Nina Gualenga of the Sariaku of the Ecuadorian Amazon, speaking to Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman. Special thanks to Mike Burke and to Carla Wills, to Nermeen Sheikh and to Dina Guzder, to Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! I'll be speaking tonight at 9 at The Place to Be here in Paris. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8 a.m. Stay tuned for Positively Revolting after this.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Fiesta Flamenca Navideña on Friday and Saturday, December 11th and 12th at 7 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater in Portland. Fiesta Flamenca Navideña will celebrate the season in flamenco style with performances by Three Shine Flamenco, Stomptown Flamenco, Coro Navideño, and more. Again, that's Fiesta Flamenca Navideña. Friday and Saturday, December 11th and 12th at 7 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater, 55 Northeast Farragut Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Music, Nature, and Storytelling, an experiential weekend workshop from January 8th through the 10th at Cedar Ridge Retreat and Conference Center in Vernonia, Oregon. Storytelling as a practice broadens our perspective and helps us understand the significance of our experiences. This workshop teaches the roots of storytelling and delves into the storyteller's mind. No prior experience required. And the deadline for registration is December 18th. Again, that's Music, Nature, and Storytelling, a weekend workshop January 8th through the 10th at Cedar Ridge Retreat in Vernonia, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from PBP Insurance, working to assist individuals throughout Oregon with Oregon enrollment process through healthcare.gov. Information on how PBP Insurance can help is available at 503-223-3638 or enrollnoworegon.com.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world. Cast your vote.
Spring break, and we came back here with the upper creature.
Spring break, and we came back.
And good morning, good morning. You are tuned to KBOO, your very own community radio station here at KBOO in Portland. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are here together today talking about violence against sex workers and how this is really one of the hubs when we are talking about anti-racist work, when we are talking about misogyny, when we are talking about homophobic violence and trans violence, when we talk about classism. All of these things intersect when we look at how sex workers are treated and the horrific violence that is perpetrated against sex workers and the stigmatization that fuels that violence, as well as prohibits many sex workers from seeking help after assaults. So that's the topic we will be talking about, and we hope to be joined by a couple of guests here in moments, we hope. In the meantime, we've got plenty to say on the subject, because unfortunately, there is a lot to say. First of all, next Thursday is the International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers, and there is an action in Portland that is meeting at 4:30 in the Northwest Park Blocks. There's a couple of actions. I think they meld into each other. Hopefully our guests can give us more information about that when they arrive. But in the meantime, let us just know that 4:30 in the Northwest Park Blocks will be gathering, vigil, remembrance for sex workers who have been lost, and a call. It's part of an international call to action to end violence against sex workers.
Yeah, I pulled something up and I went, how can it be at the Red and Black Cafe? Oh, wait, this is 2013.
Yeah, rather it's been old. Going on for years.
Yeah, imagine that.
This year, apparently, meeting in the
Stunning.
Northwest Park Blocks. Right, so why is this an important issue? And what can we do about it? First of all, I want to just mention a few statistics. These gleaned directly from Sex Workers Outreach Project. And their citations, whoopsie doodles, look at that. I love it when my computer does things without my
it can. Sprouts a little mind of its
you
own.
Know. Yeah, let's go ahead and look at some of these statistics. Violence against sex workers is actually 4 times higher in the U.S. than in many than in countries like the U.K., where commercial sex work is legal. In the U.S., it's criminalized, and we see a really what is clearly a direct result of that.
Not in Nevada.
There are
certain states.
There's a little pocket, you know. I think that's pretty the only, yeah. Pretty much the only pocket. Depending on the kind of sex work. In the U.K., brothel owning, public solicitation, and pimping are crimes, but the actual workers are not criminalized.
That's interesting.
So in Denmark... where sex work was, Norway, where sex work was legal in 2008. There is a ban introduced in 2009, and violence against sex workers increased by about 50%. We see this correlation actually around the world, and that's troubling, right? And we can see how these forces, the dynamics play out to create that dynamic. Also, you know, last night, for those following along the Daniel Holtzclaw case, Daniel Holtzclaw was a cop in Oklahoma who was accused of sexually assaulting and raping a number of Black women in the community that he was, quote, policing, end quote. And after a pretty thorough investigation, he was actually brought up on charges, fired from the police department. And after a lengthy trial and lengthy deliberation, the verdict came down yesterday and he was found guilty of 18 charges, 4 of them being first degree rape, and is looking at potentially life in prison. People are fairly quick to say, some people are fairly quick to say, he's a bad apple. Oh, yeah. I'm glad that he's getting what's coming to him because he's given a bad name to the police. I'm going to say he's not alone. And again, rape cases involving Chicago street prostitutes, 25% of sex workers identified the rapist as a police officer. On a bad date sort of hotline in reports of clients to avoid and a national sort of blacklisting effort to have sex workers be able to reach out and educate each other about problems within their communities. Four times more complaints were filed about police than pimps.
Well, and also you were saying before we went on the air that around on the Twitterverse and other social media sites, they were saying about this Holtz guy that they were prostitutes that he was raping. However, earlier
in the case, that was sort of a little flurry of, oh, well, you know, he's a cop. He has to deal with prostitutes. How can you know? And the
how can you tell if they were raped?
You know, yes, the sort of typical ignorant lines that follow. But really, we're talking about these are poor women in a community, and regardless whether they were engaged in sex work or not, that is beside the point. There's always also that just to mention that assumption that got made.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's what I was
is also an interesting thing to look at. Yeah, so. What allows this violence? What encourages this violence? What fans these flames?
I think, what fans these flames?
Again, we're looking at the intersectionality of racism, of sexism, of homophobia, of classism. We are saying this group of women is other, and they don't deserve protection because they have fallen. We're going to get to that.
Okay.
Absolutely. But this group, you know, because generally... When we look at violence against sex workers, I think the most common stereotype that comes up in people's minds are street prostitutes who are brutalized or murdered by Johns. And whereas that is a reality, it is it's not a small portion. It is just a part of the larger reality. And yeah, Lynn, you're absolutely right. Sex workers are... women, sex workers are men, sex workers are trans people, sex workers come in all nationalities, sex workers are criminalized. You know, that's really the one thing that they have in common. And being criminalized means you lack the protection that is ostensibly afforded to one through the state.
The state of illusion.
I'll try to go ahead and not choke on that line. The protection of the state is denied to most of us. Let's face facts. But still, sex workers are a particularly vulnerable portion of the population. So I want to invite your calls and your comments, your stories, your... please join us. We are at 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187.
Don't wait till the last minute.
You can also follow along on Twitter at Positive Revolt throughout the week or now. And you can also follow along on Facebook, like our fan page.
As many people do.
And
many humans.
It's true. Like our fan page at facebook.com/positively revolting. You know how to find things on Facebook, good people. Radio.
Absolutely. This is just Amnesty International is finally coming out with a decision. They request the international board to adopt a policy that seeks attainment of the highest possible protection of the human rights of sex workers through measures that include the decriminalization of sex work, taking into account a very long list of the harm reduction principle is one. That's the shortest one. And I'm like, that bears a little more going into, but that's what they've decided to do. Evidence that sex workers often engage in sex work due to marginalization, limited choices, that therefore Amnesty International will urge states to take appropriate measures to realize the economic, social, and cultural rights of all people so that no person enters sex work against their will or is compelled to rely on it as their only means of survival and to ensure that people are able to stop sex work when and if they want. States have, I mean, it goes on and on and on.
And this was actually a hugely controversial stance for Amnesty International to take. They did adopt.
This is the bottom line, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but still.
Of human rights. No, what I mean is it's like it starts here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean by the bottom line, I don't mean that but in a derogatory sense.
Yeah, I didn't think you did.
Oh, okay, good.
No, what I was going to add is that I don't understand how this is, in fact, controversial, but it was. And many folks, some of them feminists, are saying that this is tantamount to promoting prostitution and sex work, and that this is always degrading to women. And I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there that this is a fight I've had with many of my comrades in the feminist communities,
Andre Dworkin,
and others, forever. Because in fact, I don't believe it's our place as feminists to tell other women what they can and cannot do with their bodies. I do not think it is our place as feminists to tell other women how they can make a living in capitalist society. And to moralize and, quote, rescue women creates a class of, we know what's best, and it's frankly paternalistic. And I don't think paternalism has anything to do with feminism. So I'm just going to put that out there. And huge thanks to Amnesty International for taking this on and for passing this international policy just a couple months ago. So thanks, Amnesty.
And I guess we have a caller rebel who apparently, I think our guests are about here, was in the military and wants to point out that the red light districts are protected and enforced by the military. Also, often people on our police force are ex-military and abusive sex workers result from that.
Thank you very much, Rebel, for your call. I'm thinking that our guests are here. And
sounds like.
That's what I'm guessing.
All right.
So moments from now, we'll go ahead and do that and introduce some folks. So in the meantime, again, I want to remind you, you can call in 503-231-8187. Again, our Facebook and Twitter information is, Facebook. Facebook.com/PositivelyRevolting. You can find us on Twitter at Positive Revolt.
We're all over the place.
We are there.
You can even go to PositivelyRevolting@gmail.com if you like.
Oh, you can email us.
Typing in with the email, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We check that sometimes, usually just during the show. Oops, I said it out loud. Good morning, Red.
Good morning. I'm Camille, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good morning, Camille. I was just going to take a guess.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's a 50-50 chance.
Good morning, Camille. Good morning. Sorry I'm late.
That's right. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
No problem. I'm happy to be here.
All right.
And so you work with the Sex Worker Outreach Coalition?
Yes, I do. I'm actually one of the co-reps for the Sex Worker Outreach Project. And we're an organization of allies and sex workers. We are working towards a more safe environment for sex workers all across the United States. And basically what we do is exactly what our name says. We do outreach and basically try to develop community and support networks for sex workers, which are some of the most marginalized people in society.
Yeah. And thank you for doing that work. First of all, I think it's hugely important, and I'm really happy that you can join us this morning.
Thank you.
So we've been talking about the intersectionality issues a lot, and I really want to sort of spend a little more time there because, first of all, sex workers are a very marginalized class of people in the society. And one of the ways you can tell how marginalized the class is how repugnant the humor,
mm-hmm.
quote, end quote, humor
right.
is that goes around that community, that people. And, in this day still, You know, it's still okay in some circles to make rape jokes. It's still okay in some circles to make incest jokes. But the circle is much larger when it's okay to make jokes about violence against sex workers. And that, to me, just tells me how very accepted violence against sex workers is in general society, how diminished, you know, that is in people's minds who are not directly affected by this threat on a daily basis. And when we look at who is affected disproportionately, people of color are affected, poor people are affected, trans people are affected. And so we're looking at the marginalized of the marginalized communities.
Absolutely.
Can you speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah. Actually, I think that, you know, we all just saw a case with Daniel Hotzclaw. You know, finally, we actually have a conviction. And, you know, he's actually being charged with 18 of 36 counts, which is a really big deal. And I, you know, I can't imagine that we would see, you know, any kind of charges like this without the Black Lives Matter movement. And so, you know, I think that we're really in a good place to be pushing for more and like a better response to sex worker violence. But I mean, he used his position, as folks know, as being a police officer and a former police officer to victimize women of color, predominantly Black women who are very poor on social services, or were sex workers, or were former sex workers,
or drug users,
or drug users.
People with a record.
Here's Red.
Good morning, Red.
Good morning, Red.
Yeah, I think that this case, a lot of us have been watching it very closely, you know, with bated breath, kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. And it's a really big deal that people are actually taking this seriously, especially since we have there's so many instances of sex worker violence and people get away with it all the time, like the Green River Killer in from here in the Pacific Northwest, there's a quote from him that just chilled me to the bone when I read it. But it also made a lot of sense in the context of the racist, sexist, horophobic society that we live in.
And how long it took to catch him.
It took to catch him, because people had for years been reporting about a man who was either a police officer or connected to the police stalking underage sex workers. So people who are under 18 mostly, and street sex workers. So, and he ended up murdering over 76 women. And counting, essentially. Like, I don't think they've actually found all of the graves.
No. Right.
And so basically what he said, the quote from him is, "I thought I was helping out the police." And yeah. I think that's exactly the kind of sentiment this society fosters when, you know, full service sex work is criminalized, when strippers are not even paid a wage and are expected to pay to work, when the entire business is centered around their labor. And I just think that it's disgusting, the kind of reaction that we saw to Stoya's rape allegations and to Christy Mack's attack. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's mostly about women who are criminalized, like Monica Jones from Arizona, who was arrested for having, she was basically arrested for being Black and trans, but she was technically arrested officially arrested for having condoms on her, which is a big problem in a lot of states in the United States. People can be criminalized. It's essentially a stop and frisk law for sex workers.
Yeah. And then I was actually going to bring up, related to the Green River Killer, there's a killer in Long Island for the past, I don't know, 13 years, who has been killing people and their bodies are being found. And at one point, a sex worker escaped from him and called the police. Like, she made it to a house. She called the police. The police came. They laughed at her, and her body was found a year later. So that happens. It also happened with the young 13-year-old sex worker that Jeffrey Dahmer killed. The police came and laughed at him. So yeah. Historically, Ridgway is completely right.
Yeah, actually, Jeffrey Dahmer, a thing I learned in Sex Workers Unite, a history of sex worker organizing from Stonewall to the Slut Walk, was that a number of neighbors who were people of color, either Asian or Black, had called in Jeffrey Dahmer's behavior, and the police just laughed at them because he was a white man who seemed respectable, and they were poor people of color.
Yeah.
And you know, so we see how these prejudices play into the cycle of violence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Red, you just joined us, but yes, we haven't done an introduction for you.
Hi.
So our listeners will know who we're talking to.
So, since we're in a little unconventional order of things, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Red. I'm one of the reps for SWAP with Camille. And I'm also on SWOC, the Sex Workers Outreach Coalition, which is mostly social worker based. And I'm also the founder and director of STROLL, which is a street outreach program that does HIV and other health harm reduction outreach for street workers.
Thank you. Now everyone knows who you are and they can identify your voice as we're talking. Very good. Very good. Well, we have a caller, except did you have something you wanted to say?
Oh, let's go ahead and talk to a caller.
Okay.
I talked a lot for the first bit. Oops.
And you'll talk more.
I will. I have no rent control.
Emily. Emily, you're on the air in KBOO. Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to speak about intersectionality for a second.
Sure.
And I found that it's easier to conceptualize these things, and not in terms of isms, which are fairly non-specific and can, you know, encompass a lot of different supremacies, but in terms of supremacies, rather, because supremacies are really the root of the problem and very specific. So if you look at historically, about 10,000 years ago, the human supremacy, where humans subjugated other animals to do their agricultural work for them, was the precedent that then very quickly morphed into male supremacy and rich supremacy, and the hierarchy of social classes came very close on the heels of agricultural production with other animals. And then male supremacy and the shift from the patriarchy, or from the matriarchy to the patriarchy, where women then became seen similar to how the other animals were seen as property of the men. So human supremacy then led to male supremacy and rich supremacy sort of simultaneously, and now we still have all of that very normalized everywhere. And so people, I think, who have one tend to have the others, or very often, because it's a precedent that's set in their mind that they're the one that needs to be saved if, you know, if the tide starts to rise. Who's going to ground the
right
scarcity mentality?
Some beings should be objectified or are here to be objectified. Some beings are here to be actors and agents of their own lives. It's pretty much
right.
What I'm hearing you say, that initial split about 10,000 years ago around the Mesopotamian Crescent was really the beginning of the downfall of it all.
Yes, and you can see that with how violence is often indicated by violence against other animals. You know, you've got that human supremacy that is expressed that way.
Okay,
and
well,
then it goes on and overflows. So
Emily,
I want to
thank you very much for your call this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. So let's actually, can we look for a moment at next week's action
give
details so people can get involved if they want to. So it's next Thursday, December 17th.
Mm-hmm. And that was a date originally picked by some Seattle sex workers, really, to be honest, some rich, white, privileged indoor sex workers, which has been historically a problem with the day. And so we're trying to make it more intersectional by being more open and less focused on white cis women. But it was started in response to Gary Ridgway's non-arrest and ongoing praying.
Gary Ridgway is the Green River killer.
Yeah. And ongoing murders. And so ever since then, it's been an annual thing. I think that this past year, more sex workers were killed in the U.S. than anywhere else in the world, although not cumulatively, I don't think. But I'm not positive about that.
Well, and the only state that sex work is legal is Nevada.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the rest of the world, Europe in particular, mm-hmm, I wouldn't say, I don't know about Asian and African countries, there's a lot of legal.
Yeah.
Sex work is legal in many areas.
Various
many
stages of legalized. So there's different regulations. And then in New Zealand, it's decriminalized entirely. It's decriminalized, I believe, in New South Wales. And then it's various stages of legal in some states of Australia, but not all. So sex workers get to have totally like life-changing precedents where a sex worker was raped in New Zealand and she got to take her rapist to court and won, which is amazing. Yeah. And it's something that wouldn't happen here, obviously, with the
reactions. It's sad. We don't like that she was raped, but it's good that she got to...
I mean, something that happens in the United States is judges will...
have so much to say about that. Yeah. I mean, it is, women are not property. And whatever economic means we choose to try to survive in a capitalist economy, we're all exploited in a capitalist economy.
There's no ethical consumption under capitalism.
Right? Yep. Okay, thank you. And so to have our very bodies looked at as a business transaction is offensive in the extreme. So, yeah. Let's also make sure that people have contact information. If you are a sex worker and you want to connect with Sex Worker Outreach Coalition, or if you're an ally and you want to connect with Sex Worker Outreach Coalition, how does one do that?
Well, there's three organizations, and it's a little confusing because
it was rather confusing.
Yeah, are similar. There's SWAP, which is the Sex Workers Outreach Project, which is largely sex worker led. We do accept accomplices, partly for plausible deniability and partly because why not? Mm-hmm. And then there's the Sex Workers Outreach Coalition, which is a coalition of social services organizations in Portland, which work together with sex workers to try and provide services and other things. And then there's also Stroll, which is my organization, and we put out Working It. I brought you a copy.
Thank you.
And so to contact any of us, there's websites. The SWOC website is under construction right now, I think. Like, we lost control of it somewhere.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
There's been a lot of transition over the years.
The SWAP website is swappdx.org. It's a little bit out of date. And then there's strollpdx.org. And that one is more up to date. And then the email, swapportland, swopportland@gmail.com. I don't know the SWAC email. And then
I don't think I know it either. Sorry, yeah, folks.
We will post all of these things on the Positively Revolting Facebook page so that folks that may not be writing down things so fast early in the morning. I'm not a morning person, but I play one once a week to do this show.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I do try. And, I know that's a lot of email, whatnot, and URLs to try to remember. But we will post that on the Positively Revolting Facebook page so people will have access to that later. You'll have to stick around and give it to me. Okay. So let's see.
Let's let people know once again that this is Positively Revolting on KBOO. I'm Ani. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani. As we said, we play Morning People once a week.
Some days more successfully than others.
We are here this morning with talking about stopping violence against sex workers. We're here with Red and Camille, and we're talking about the organizations that they're with, and an action that's coming up. And we would love to hear your comments and questions. 503-231-8187. I still have the phone number. It is tattooed on my eyelids.
Awesome. That's so good. And fashionable.
Thank you.
So we were talking about the day. Mm-hmm. Next Thursday, 4:30, meeting at the Northwest Park Block.
Yeah. That's right. To attract attention and to, get the most out of like the slowly setting sun, we're gonna be at either side of the park blocks and hopefully in the median.
Very picturesque.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I've been planning it for a while. Those are my words. But we've got like 34 red umbrellas. So if you are driving down Burnside and you see some red umbrellas and some names, that's what's happening there. We're memorializing.
Jump out and join us.
Yeah, jump out and join us. I mean, don't stop traffic or do. It depends on how much attention you want to draw to this and how much police presence. But definitely, that's what's going to be happening from 4:30 to 5:30. And then there's going to be hot chocolate and hand warmers, too, just to make it a little less unpleasant for you in case it rains.
And umbrellas.
Yeah, and umbrellas. Totally. Yeah. And then there's going to be a half hour break from 5:30 to 6. And then at 6, they're going to move to Pivot, where the Irish style wake was going to be. We're going to have people reading the names of the dead killed over the past year, and then people talking about how state-sanctioned violence has impacted them, you know, because it impacts in a lot of different ways. You can lose housing because currently in Portland, if you accept money from a sex worker, you're a trafficker, and no landlord wants to be a trafficker.
Which is the case in a lot of big cities across the United States. It's really unfortunate with these new trafficking legislation that conflates consensual sex work and trafficking, makes it really difficult for sex workers' families and landlords and even
taxi drivers.
Basically anyone can be a trafficker if they accept money from a sex worker.
And God help you if you're a man of color.
Yep.
But yeah, so, and we're going to talk
that's
about
sort
that.
Sort of generally goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That does. General statement.
We're going to talk about that, and then we're going to have a playlist and possibly bingo, and just try to have fun and celebrate the lives that are lost. Like, we've mourned them, and now we would like to celebrate and make sure that they're remembered happily.
As every good Irish-style wake eventually gets around to.
There will be wine.
There will be wine. Mm-hmm. Excellent. There's so many places I want to go to from this. We've obviously human trafficking is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. You know, to this end, slavery happens around the world in many occupations. Articles coming out yesterday around slave trade in Thai fishing boats.
Yes.
Right?
Sorry.
We all know that most of the chocolate we all love is produced by slave labor, usually children. Not to mention, those really nice beaded sparkly clothes that I love, from India, from Bangladesh, often made by child slave labor.
Yeah.
Because they've got the fingers that can bead. I remember hearing a talk on that once. It was always has stayed with me.
And their eyesight hasn't gone.
Oh, my God. Anyway, but moving on. We have trafficking in many areas. And then we get to sex trafficking. And we get these laws that may be well-intended, but have these consequences that people haven't thought through. And that impact the lives of sex workers in a very negative way and those surrounding
them.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you give us a little bit more on that? Because I have a feeling that this is something that a lot of our listeners are like, but wait, we want anti-sex trafficking laws.
Totally. And so do we.
Yeah.
It's just there's this conflation. There's this conflation, and I believe that it stems from this like metaphysical, really specific white European Christian metaphysical definition of sex as the ultimate intimacy for women. And so sex without the context of an intimate partnership and love for women is automatically going to destroy their integrity. And you have to really interrogate that because it's not, it's so obviously not the standard that men are held to. Like, James Dean has never been accused of being raped, even though he's a porn worker. As we saw with the rent boy crisis, none of those men were accused of like being raped or being sex slaves. It's only women. And so you have to question why this is such a popular stereotype. Like, why are women not allowed to have sexual agency? Why is cash for consent conflated, like automatically considered coerced? You know, like a lot of people do things for cash that aren't coerced. And a lot of people who are in vulnerable positions do not have sex for cash, which I think automatically proves that it's not coerced. You know, like plenty of homeless people do not do sex work.
What do you say about marriage?
Yeah, I do happen to believe that marriage is a form of sex work.
Many people say sponsored. Yes.
You're trading you're trading sex for long-term safety often. There are people who have sex when they don't want to have sex because they want to have children or because they're bored or because it will make them feel closer to someone or because it's...
That doesn't mean that they were raped.
No, there's a lot of different ways in which we can... talk about consent. It doesn't have to be enthusiastic, which is something that a lot of people have been trying to push as the standard, enthusiastic consent, but it's not always enthusiastic, and that doesn't make it rape. So given that, I think we need to look a little bit closer at why sex work is considered so violating, like the ultimate violation of women's integrity, and only women's integrity and children.
Well, it's tied into with slut shaming Absolutely, yeah. And critically. I was talking shortly before you got here about the branch of feminism that is moralistically saving women from ourselves by apparently knowing what's better for us and our bodies.
Of course.
You know, because they're, I believe you hit the nail on the head when you said often middle to upper class cis white women who just really, I think, probably got into moralizing from a very young age. And, you know, I don't, this has always been something that drives me a little crazy.
Yeah. It's so, an old trope. It's been around for a while. There's a really excellent book called Intimate Matters, A History of Sexuality in the United States. Because there wasn't prostitution in the United States when white settlers came over here. White settlers brought prostitution to the United States. And so he and the other co-author, Estelle B. Friedman, go through like how prostitution developed alongside, patriarchal marriage. Mm-hmm. And capitalism, actually, in the United States. And I think it's a very interesting study, but it's fascinating. The rhetoric today is almost exactly the same as the rhetoric of the early 1900s, that they have to save these young, poor, probably blonde white women, from these horrible men. Whereas, back then, even like women who weren't in the middle class, who didn't run their own household, like they could be beat by their employers.
Weren't middle class. There were aristocratic
women.
Right,
exactly.
Perhaps there was a growing merchant class at that time. But yet women had no right to property even unless maybe they could inherit some things. But yes, there was. And there grew the courtesan class from
there. Well, there's actually a couple of really interesting books about the development of social work and like pink collar work out of the settler house, which is something that women would set up in the inner city to help immigrant women, the settler house movement. And so the trafficking in the like late 19th, early 20th century movement began out of an immigration fear, a lot like today, where people were afraid of mostly Jewish men at this point stealing their young white daughters. And it's also interesting because Estelle B. Friedman has this other book, Redefining Rape, where she talks about how rape rights and who got to testify and be believed with regard to rape were expanded for white women at the expense of black women, women of color, and lower class women.
Well, black women were considered the property of all white men at the founding of the United States. So black women couldn't even be prostitutes, couldn't be sex workers until the end of slavery. And even then, even today, clients and customers will argue about the worth of a black woman's body. It's incredibly disgusting.
But you see that in the phrase white slavery, like it's just white women, like automatically lower class women, Southern European women and Asian women. And you also see it in the immigration laws of the time. And I've been reading this book about immigration laws up until the present. And it's true throughout the 20th century, like whose sexuality is allowed in America. And it's really only like Northern European white women. Like if you're married to a Southeast Asian woman, good luck getting her in this country until recently. And maybe even then also LGBT people weren't allowed until 1990.
Mm-hmm. The history of immigration is fraught with racism and classism. Come to think of it, current immigration policies are fraught with racism and classism.
And I see that as inextricable from the sex trafficking thing.
Yeah.
Really. Because trafficking is also a movement across borders. And so there's a lot of people who want to leave their places of origin for whatever reason, because they want to travel, because they want a better wage, or because they're kidnapped. Like, that does happen. And so they use licit or illicit networks to migrate. And, like, with regard to labor trafficking, which is actually, I think, two-thirds more prevalent than sex trafficking, the U.S. makes it really easy to labor traffic people because they have tied work visas to a singular employer. So the employer can do whatever they want to their worker and the worker can't protest, because as soon as they leave that worker's employer, they're an illegal alien and they're immediately deported, regardless of whether they've started proceedings against their employer for trafficking or not. So you can see how that makes it really easy to traffic people.
Absolutely.
Obscenely so.
Yeah.
So let's take, we have Nia on the line.
Let's go ahead and talk to Nia. Good morning. You're on the air.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to thank you very much for talking about this. This is very interesting, but it's I'm a trans woman of color, and I wanted to talk about that and how we trans women of color were like put into this group where like we are very successful and at risk by the authority, you know, state sanctioned violence mm-hmm. against us.
Mm-hmm.
So I like in a white supremacist, hetero, like capitalist patriarchy, trans women of color, specifically black trans women of color, they can't find work because no one will hire them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They can't find a home because no one will take them in. So they have to turn to sex work. Not all the time, not all trans women.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But the ones that are not accepted by their family because of their sexuality or their gender, non-conforming gender. And so they have to turn to sex work. And in most cases, they're susceptible to violence by their johns and to the point where they're like beaten, like they're brutalized and murdered. And, you know, I did some work for Trans Day of Remembrance recently.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I immersed myself in a lot of death of trans women. And the reports of these deaths are so horrifying. Mm-hmm. That,
yeah.
Like, there are over 400 trans women in the world that were murdered this year. And in the United States alone, there are 22 to 24
mm-hmm.
trans women that have been reported
right.
murdered, reported, and that right, is just reported, reported that are murdered by, you know, people. I want to say, like, in some cases, it is the johns that are doing this because they are, like, they are attracted to trans women. They seek out trans women for sex, and when they feel ashamed of what they've done,
right.
the only way that they feel like they can take care of this is to end the life of
yeah.
a woman.
Right.
So I guess that's just what I wanted to share with everyone. Thank you very much. I was like so moved by everything that you've said.
Yeah, thank you so
thanks
much
for your
call.
Yeah.
And thanks for the work you did on International Day of Remembrance for Trans Women.
Yeah, that was an incredible event. I went to the one at PCC Cascade. I was very moved.
And yes.
Yes, that was the one, actually.
Oh,
thank you.
It was lovely.
Yeah, thank you very much. Continue with the good work. Bye.
You too.
Thank you.
Too,
you.
Bye.
You know, looking at so many issues, oh my God, where do we even go? We have about 13 minutes left, so I want to encourage people to call in if you have questions, comments, want to join in our discussion. Go ahead and give us a call at 503-231-8187. And let's go ahead and talk to Teresa. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Ani.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Red. Hello. Hi, everybody that's there.
Is this Teresa Rayford?
By saying Black Trans Lives Matter. Black Trans Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And in honor of today, I just wanted to say that if all advocates right here in the city of Portland, there is a black woman who was actually profiled, assaulted, and even alleged sexual misconduct by officers that are on the Portland police force. And she had the courage to file the appeals that dismissed her claims. And she's in her third day of trial today. And it's been like a really empty courtroom, and the media is really not on it. They have other interesting things to talk mm-hmm. about. But I think that in relevance of what's happening today and what's happening in today's current news as far as with the officer mm-hmm. in Oklahoma mm-hmm. and our 13 sisters and children that were brutalized by him that came courageously forward to testify, I'm just happy with all the work that everybody is doing. I'm thankful for the intersectionality of all of it. I do see the tide is turning, and I just wanted to say that you guys inspire me, and just let's
you inspire me, Teresa.
As connected as possible, because we are winning. Be encouraged, be inspired, be empowered, and just thank you guys.
Hey, Teresa, is there, so yes. Can people come to the courtroom?
Oh, absolutely. It's
and where, what, do you know what time it is? What number the courtroom is?
It starts 9, but it's all day. We've been in there since Wednesday, and Lisa Haynes is her name. Mm-hmm. She's very courageous. The only media that's been there is Maxine from the Oregonian, and she's basically, she did a story Wednesday. But I think this is a really big deal. Like, this court proceedings is, like, super educational, you know.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Not just let this stuff go. You have to, like, fight back. And she's fighting back. She's, like, 4'10", and they mistaken her for a Hispanic male that was 5'4 to 5'6", you know. And they basically said, well, she was wearing the same clothing, which was, like, a black coat and hat, you know. So it's just crazy. And, I mean, yeah, she's courageous. It's going down. I'm hoping that we get a victory in this, and regardless of the outcome, it is victorious that she had the courage to do it. And it's work like the work that everybody on this, you know, on this channel is doing that helps us stay encouraged. Because as you see, we're by ourselves. You know, we're really all we got. We're the 99, so just keep it up.
Wait, can I ask you what courtroom it was again? I didn't hear.
Room 14B.
Okay, thank you.
On the 14th floor in the federal courtroom, 1000 Southwest 3rd Street.
Thank you so much.
From the Injustice Center.
Thank you very much, Teresa, for the update.
Hey, thank you, guys.
You take care.
So just for 1 minute, let me say what's coming up on KBOO this morning. At 9, we hear the first of two programs honoring the life of activist, poet, and musician John Trudell. We'll hear For Future Generations, a talk with poetry recorded in Portland in 1998. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, groups in Paris call on the rich nations to address the devastating inequalities in climate change policy. We'll also feature excerpts of a powerful new speech by radical economist Richard Wolff. At 11, Paul Rowland hosts a part two of our special on the late activist, poet, and musician, John Trudell, with a combination of spoken word and music. I want to thank KBOO members for your generous support for the community radio. It's not too late to become a member this year or renew. Just go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to Me. And thanks, everyone, who contributed in our membership drive last week. And it's still not too late to do that either. You can just keep going. We have some matching things going on for the rest of the month, I believe. So
I think that's pretty much what that meant. Just go to kboo.fm. You'll find out all manner of things about it. Because it's never too late to
Never join. Too late to become a member. Never,
That's
never, never.
Right.
And, you know,
because really, it's your contributions, it's your financial support that allows us to have discussions around violence against sex workers, around destigmatizing sex work, around the intersectionality that really comes into play as we look at the violence that's perpetrated in marginalized communities. Where else can we have this discussion, right?
Yeah.
Strangely, corporations ain't going to fund it. So I'm just going to say that. Weird. I'm going to put it out there. And we've been talking off and on this morning about the power structures and how, in fact, the police are not necessarily your allies when it comes to trying to stay safe and protect oneself as a sex worker or as any marginalized woman when it comes right down to it. One of the quotes that kind of chilled me in hearing from the women that were assaulted and abused by Holtzclaw, you know, I believe she was 17 when he raped her on her mom's porch. And she said, who was she going to call? Like, she was going to call the police on the police?
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's an article actually called The Sex Traffickers in Blue, which finds in about the past 6 or 8 months, over 21 instances of police assault against sex workers or police being involved in trafficking themselves. And then if you extend it back to the past year, the number grows exponentially. So, yeah, who are you going to call? Are you going to call the police and the police? You
Ghostbusters?
Can.
No.
Right.
That's about it.
And like Mia, the previous caller, said, like, actually, I forgot what I was going to say, so never mind. But
I hate that when that happens anyway.
Yeah, totally. So what she said that I wanted to connect to is, like, those are just the trans women that have been murdered. You know, these are just the incidents that have been reported. We hear from full service sex workers all the time about cops showing up, stealing money from extorting. Them, raping them, extorting, yeah. all kinds of things. And it's specifically because sex work is criminalized in the United States.
And they know that they can't afford it.
Yeah, that they can do things like this. There's this excellent infographic that we've been sharing that SWAP National put together for
Hips,
December
actually.
17th. Huh?
Hips.
Oh, never mind. Take it back. Hips. it's this
so
great infographic.
Acronyms.
Yeah.
Really.
So hard to keep track of them all. But you know, kind of it goes through some European countries and then the UK and the
and
United
the
States and the level of the percentage of sex workers that have violence perpetrated against them in the United States is like staggering. It's like 5-6 times higher than the UK or any place that it's decriminalized.
Well, it seems to boil down to the criminalization
mm-hmm. and the right to like to seek justice like, and or like protection.
Well,
you know?
Without
which,
prosecution,
yeah,
right. Which if it's decriminalized would be possible,
yeah. right.
Yeah, but again, also we have to chip away at the stigma,
mm-hmm. yes.
Because
which
yeah.
is one rise and it's still criminalized. But anyway, we have. Can we slip in one more caller?
I think we can.
It's Emily Quick. Day. It's John Trudell Day and Emily Day here at KBOO apparently. So we have another Emily on the line. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks so much for your time. I just wanted to bring up one other really serious violence that's perpetrated against sex workers, and that's the violence of the medical system.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So many sex workers don't receive compassionate, non-judgmental, or even adequate care.
That's for
and,
sure.
And they die because of it. And mm-hmm. especially that's compounded when they're also drug users. And mm-hmm. so I worked at a drop-in center in Baltimore for people who were involved in sex work, and I didn't meet a single person that had ever had a validating or satisfying encounter with the medical
yeah.
system.
Yeah, and that goes, I mean, there's so much to say about that and everything else this morning. We could do 3 days of programming on this, I think.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I have a section in the back of the zine working it that I do that is sex worker friendly medical care or provider care. And so if anyone knows of anyone who's sex worker friendly, please, Ani's going to put the email on the website. Please email it to me because it's a growing section and I would really love to be able to provide that to people.
And it is a real problem.
I actually know a naturopathic doctor, Angela Carter.
Oh, yeah, she's in it. She's
awesome.
She was the first person, actually.
Fantastic. Thanks very much for your call, Emily.
Thank you for your time.
Hugely important subject. And again, sometimes, you know, that is so intertwined with slut shaming in general. You know, as somebody who has not really played within the confines that a good girl is supposed to play in, when I talk to healthcare providers throughout my life, mm-hmm. I've gotten some pretty bad responses. You know, multiple partners? Well, you know, have you thought of therapy? Would you, you know, again, we have to stop slut shaming, period. And that's really one of the basic parts because women actually do control our own bodies mm-hmm. and we can do with them
weirdly
what we want.
Well, it gets extra scary now you know? Because doctors are being trained to recognize trafficking.
Right.
So if you start to sound like you might be a sex worker, they call the cops on you in many places.
Yeah.
So it's even harder to seek sex worker friendly care.
Again, when well-intended laws go wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think we see that over and over and over again when we look at laws pertaining to, well, the moralistic aspects of protecting women from things. Now, as a feminist, I'm against violence against women, mm-hmm. and we need to stop it. But really, enacting the state generally hasn't helped us.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking to the McKinnon laws that criminalized, quote, violent pornography in Canada. And
right.
that was immediately, first thing that happened was it got turned around and shut down queer-friendly sex shops
mm-hmm.
Because they had BDSM smut.
Yeah.
You know, and again, you're like, that wasn't what I had in, oh. Anyways, we got 2 minutes left. We're out of show. I want to make sure people have contact information so that A, they can find the event next week. Of course, that's all over our Facebook page and our KBOO website. as well, so you can link to it. But if people want to get a hold of you because they want support, or they want to provide support, they want to be an ally, or they are a sex worker, how do people get in touch?
I guess the easiest would be, it's kind of long, you guys, but it's workingitinportland@gmail.com. And it's taken from the title of the zine that I do, the sex worker public health zine, which is called Working It. And the next issue will be out on December 17th. And you can buy a copy at the event. And it's on state-sanctioned violence against sex workers with a lot of research. So you can quote at anyone who tries to argue with you, which I like.
Awesome. All right. We are out of time. Red and Camille,
thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. This is great. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
We are here for you anytime. Take care. And next week, we'll continue to be positively revolting. It'll be right before the solstice. One of our favorite shows every year.
Might be something special. You never know.
All right. Cheers.
There comes a time when every second, every day, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9 a.m. Coming up, we hear the first of two programs honoring the life of activist, poet, and musician John Trudell. We'll hear For Future Generations, a talk with poetry recorded in Portland in 1998. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary, followed by Flashpoints. And at 11, Paul Rowland hosts part two of our special on the late activist, poet, and musician John Trudell, with a combination of spoken word and music. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for Community Radio. It's not too late.